Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I am your host, Mary Catherine Hamm, here in the United States of America. I'm here with my co-host, Vic Mattis, of the Washington Free Beacon. We got a lot going on. We got a SCOTUS argument we want to talk about. We have some really good Now It Can Be Tolds from the New York Times, a bloodbath kerfuffle. And before we get to any of that, however, possibly a Kate update, if we have time. Before we get to that, how's it going, Vic?
You mean my wife? Oh, no.
Yes.
Hello.
Is your wife missing?
A Kate update. I think she's still with me. Hello, Mary Catherine, and welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say apologies to our listeners. I'm a little bit stuffed up. It is now officially the allergy season.
It is.
The cherry blossoms in town are in full bloom, and it's everywhere in the air. And
they're also a little early, so they may have taken you by surprise. I actually think I saved myself by being out of town last week.
You escaped all the...
I escaped it.
I think I took one Claritin earlier in the week, and I just thought to myself, that'll be enough.
No.
And then today my eyes are watering and I'm all stuffed up. So apologies to our listeners. It's not like I'm eating or drinking on the air, though, which is apparently really offensive to some of our listeners. Apologies for that.
So I realized after I got to D.C., a couple of sad things when I moved here when I was in my 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Number one, early April birthday. It's cold here in early April, so boo to that. My birthday was warm my whole life, and then it was chilly when I got here, so I didn't like that. And two, I would get sick every year the week of my birthday, and I couldn't figure out what was going on because I grew up in North Carolina and Georgia. Surely it can't be the pollen. I am invincible because I'm from North Carolina and Georgia. Nope. It turns out I'm not invincible, and what I was getting was sort of a flu-like reaction to the cherry blossoms in full bloom, which usually happened around the week of my birthday. Now, this year, it's quite a bit earlier, so I think I saved myself by being out of town and missing the buildup.
You do hear a lot of people say this, including my wife, which is, I've never been allergic to any of these things ever, and then I came down to Washington, D.C. area, and then all of a sudden, all the symptoms kick in because this is a swamp.
It's a different vibe.
Is. But other than that, Mary
Perhaps
Catherine,
it's the Japanese last.
It is.
It's the revenge.
It's the revenge. You know, you're the second person to make that sort of a reference today.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe you're the audience for it.
Yeah. Maybe it's going after me. Although I did have a cherry blossom milkshake on Sunday by accident.
Is that like floral or is it just pink?
It's just pink. It's okay. Basically a strawberry milkshake.
Okay.
But a cherry-ish.
Because I would be
It was a mistake. They gave us the wrong order. And
Where do you get this thing?
At Ted's Bulletin. Oh. And my son wanted their version of a shamrock shake. Mm-hmm. It's basically minty. I still think McDonald's is better, even though it's all fake. But they accidentally gave us one. And they said, you can just keep it. I said, well, I know what. Don't want to. You know how I feel about waste?
Yeah.
I don't have to eat that.
Obviously. I would be into a cherry blossom, like a floral cocktail.
Yes.
I bet you can get that around here.
Yes. In fact, there have been I've received several emails from publicists about various Japanese whiskey and related cocktails to celebrate their special time of year.
Okay.
Mary Catherine, welcome back.
Thank you.
To the United States. How was the trip? And I really want to know mostly how was the food. But go ahead. I want to hear all about it.
The trip was great. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I know that last week's end of the week episode was like more serious than usual, but I felt like it was needed to bring attention to things that 6 months in, many people, particularly in media and political circles, have forgotten about or tried to forget about.
They've moved on.
It gives us, you know, needed reset, needed context. You know, the whole reason this whole thing started was October 7th, and there are still babies and children in Gaza held hostage. So it was a good trip. It was a meaningful trip and a heavy trip. It was not a float in the Dead Sea and get a spa treatment trip, you know?
Right, because you've been to Israel before.
I have, and it was in less harrowing times the last time I went. Although, you know, there were always threats on the horizon. That is the nature of being in Israel. But it was 2008 when I went last, and it was a little more fun and games that time around. This time I visited, and we'll probably have a few clips here and there of folks that I spoke to, but we went up to the north to the border with Lebanon, where I learned, and I think we talked about this in last week's episode, where I did not realize, even though I follow the news closely, that 70,000 to 80,000 people have been evacuated from the north, from those communities, because of course,
from the Israeli side.
Mm-hmm, post October 7th, there was a concern that something was imminent, and right. Hezbollah is much more powerful
right.
than Hamas is.
Has a second front.
Many more munitions and much more money. And so they were concerned about that. They cleared people out. Now, the issue they're having now is that because they've cleared those people out and because October 7th was such an intelligence failure, people are scared to come back. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that's going to look. It's going to look like the army, which is doing a ton of amazing work up there. The reserves are all stationed along that border, but they will have to earn back the idea that this is a safe place mm-hmm. to be, or else you've de facto given up territory yeah. within your own very okay. small country. So that's something that I did not realize was going on. And just on a human front, all of those families with their children
yeah.
are put up in hotel rooms or relatives'
yeah.
apartments in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. These are not places that have, you know, a lot of space.
No.
So there's quite a bit of hardship and then cascading effects for the economy and all that kind of thing. So we went up there. That is perhaps counterintuitively the less safe place to be right now, because down in Gaza, everyone's very far south in Gaza,
right?
So if you're in the south of Israel, you're not that close to the fighting.
No.
That was where we went the next day. So we went to Kfar Aza, which was one of the very hard hit kibbutzim.
Good.
We spoke to the one man who lives there with his wife. He has come back to live there
wow.
in hopes that he would convince others that you can live in this place, that we can rebuild. Very brave thing to do. And then we spoke to the Nova survivor that same day. Being at the Nova Music Festival spot was one of the more tough things, because it's just very...
It's fresh. It's
well, and all the memorials for everyone are so personalized and organic yeah, because people have just gone and created
right.
them. So each of these victims has a picture up, and then they hang little things and write little things and reflects their personality mm-hmm. and stuff like that. It's just so handmade and heartfelt.
Yeah.
And seeing them, those memorials out there, and knowing that those people were just standing around dancing at a party.
Yeah.
When this happened to them.
And very pro-peace.
Yes. And then you look around you and you realize how without cover they were. I mean, there's nothing out there. There's nowhere to go. So that was pretty. And I was admired very much Yoni, who told us his story, just for being able to go back to that place and tell the story. That is a very hard thing to ask of someone.
Very traumatic.
Very traumatic. And he does it well. And of course, it is powerful coming from him. And unfortunately, because some people don't believe that these things happened,
right.
it is now sort of his full-time job to be telling people mm-hmm. that this is what happened to him.
Right.
So he will be on the West Coast, by the way, for a tour of America's universities
oh my goodness.
Soon. So I will keep you guys updated in case you know friendlies who can go support him out
yeah.
there, because I imagine it will be
yeah.
not great. He's been on several trips to America to talk to politicians. But yeah, he'll be.
What is his background too? He's not like a spokesman or anything.
No, he was just official. He was in the IDF at one point, and
he had
already served his time in the IDF, and he had come, he had gotten into festivals kind of as a drone photographer mm-hmm. and as a hobby. And the night before, and I think this was in my interview with him or what I recorded, the night before this festival, his mom had admonished him and said, "Why do you go to these festivals? They're so silly. This is a waste of your time." And he told his brother to tell his mom that he was up north instead of at this festival.
Goodness.
So his parents didn't know that he was even there until he walked into their house that night. So it was a crazy story from him. But he also said in part that his military experience did give him some skills to look around him and have his wits about him and find the correct way to get out of there. He also said God led him. Like it wasn't just that, but But he was able to look and see, okay, rockets are coming from this direction. Bursts of gunfire are coming from this direction. Like, let's process of elimination. We know what's in this direction. And there's a community 15 miles away that we can walk to, or whatever it was, 15 kilometers maybe. So we did that. And then a lot of meeting with officials mm-hmm. and various politicians from various stripes all across the political spectrum in Israel, which, by the way, at this point doesn't include that much of a left. Right. Like October 7th in some ways just took all those who would have been in favor of a two-state solution, those who would have argued for a ceasefire or for peace quicker than I would support right. or so others would support. Many of those people just like don't right. believe that anymore.
October 7 was their
yes,
wake up call.
That was the moment.
And we're still, I mean, they're in the midst of having, they're in a unity government
yes.
at the moment.
So we did a lot of that, which was enlightening. And it's always just, I think it's helpful to be in Israel because you realize the scale of the threat and the scale of the country, which is so small, and
yeah.
just the number of people available to fight these battles mm-hmm. Is limited. And it just puts so much strain on everyone.
Yeah.
And yet, when you walk down the beach in Tel Aviv, people are kicking soccer balls and playing together
right.
and hanging out with their girlfriends and busking. You know,
right.
it is a society at war, and it is also a free society enjoying itself.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes it resilient.
It is the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah. Not that Westerners care
no,
about that
no,
anymore.
No, no, not that they would.
Oh, another thing that is important, I think, as a takeaway from Israel. This whole thing, when you're there for a little while, this whole idea from the left that these are white European colonizers is just blown out of the water. Like, it's not a very white country, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's
sure.
It is a country of color. And you see that everywhere you go. And so that particularly silly point was refuted time and time again being in Israel.
I mean, there's a reason why it was called Judea.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So.
I mean, the Jews themselves, even the European Jews and the Ashkenazi Jews are not white.
Yeah.
Right? But they're also Arab Israelis. There are Mizrahi
yes.
Jews.
That's
there
right.
are there are Somalian Jews. I mean,
oh,
it's
sure.
You know, so that sort of hit home as well. But to the food.
Yes. Was it just like everywhere? Was it just like kava every day?
Oh my gosh.
I'm kidding.
Have I said on this podcast before, and apologies to my ancestors. If I had to eat one form of food for the rest of my life, uh-huh. it might be Mediterranean food.
Oh yeah.
Now, if I had to eat,
light, it's fresh, it's healthy.
Yes. Now, if I could,
even it makes you talk with an accent. I don't know
yeah.
how that.
If I could have a form of food without any
yes.
health
mm-hmm.
problems,
oh.
perhaps I would choose Southern.
Like,
but
I'm gonna say
given
Southern,
that,
Italian,
given that
Chinese.
It has upsides and downsides in that way,
yeah.
I think Mediterranean would be my choice. Gosh, so good. So
yeah.
good. The food is so amazing.
Yes.
Particularly, and I know some people are not big fans of this, but I feel like the salads and the vegetables steal the spotlight in
oh,
Israel.
Oh, it's so good, I'm sure.
The hummus, the fresh stuff. Even,
I
was served green beans, and I think it was my favorite meal, my favorite part of any meal of the entire trip.
Yeah.
And I said to the waiter, like, what is on these green beans? They're amazing. Just nothing. It was olive oil, lemon juice and salt. And I was like, but there's something else here. And I realized what it was. The lemons from
oh.
the area
uh-huh.
just are better
yeah.
and more complex.
Yes.
And there's something else going on there.
Than the one
than
from
just
the Safeway.
The sour ones I get yeah. at the Safeway. Yes.
Yeah. It's like Meyer lemons and
yes.
kefir limes and really nice things
oh,
like that. That's
so good. So yes, I ate my
I'm
fill.
I'm so jealous.
Of salads and then also mains. Obviously, I'm not going to give that up.
I mean, do you like lamb?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 It's not my favorite.
Mm.
I liked a lot of the fish dishes were
oh,
great.
Sure. So sometimes people are turned off by the gaminess of the lamb, and,
yeah.
and other times, I mean, I always felt bad. Like I would feel bad killing a lamb, and then but you know what? That's been done since biblical times. A
yes.
sacrifice
yes.
Of.
Indeed.
And so I'm okay with it.
You're okay with
yeah.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so the food was great. Wine
oh.
is good. Of
oh
course.
Yes, Israeli wine is
olives
yeah.
are fantastic.
Yeah.
So we had a very nice time. I was there with a really good group. Carol Markowitz was there. Guy Benson was there. Ilya Shapiro was there. Dave Rubin and his
yeah.
crew. Dave Marcus. It was a nice group with
nice.
A lot of. We were guided by some young Israelis. I think several of them Israeli Americans.
Right.
Who go back and forth between the U.S. and Israel. So it was interesting also to get their take.
Of course.
And to hear them talk a little bit at Sabbath Shabbat dinner about their lives post October 7th and just how frightening it was to be inside the country because they weren't sure what was going to happen.
What was going to happen next?
And the talk that they were hearing about possible casualties should Hezbollah decide it wants to jump into
yeah.
this, which it did not.
Hundreds of thousands of rockets.
Yeah, were just so frightening. There were stories of like, well, if we had to go, you know, sit in these tunnels and in the subway,
yeah.
which was recently built under
yeah.
Tel Aviv, then that's where we'd be. I mean, yeah. really.
Right. Like during the London Blitz.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So things were really frightening for them. And then the last thing we did, again, perhaps the most heavy thing we did, is we went to Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, where
they remember.
The art museum. They have various art installments and everybody's picture is up and family members and friends come to speak at a rally every Saturday night after Sabbath is over and thousands gather mm-hmm. to listen. And we got to meet several of the family while we were there, including Romy Gonin's sister, who, of course, just has a harrowing story of talking to her sister during those hours
right.
and then thinking they might get her back in the first hostage exchange and not. And that's been, 165
yeah.
days?
Still there, including Americans, I believe.
23-year-old woman. Yes, including Americans. In fact, one of whom was unfortunately determined to be deceased
yeah.
a couple days before we got to Israel. So,
well, it's good the press is always reminding us of the Americans that are being
yeah,
held hostage
by
a terrorist group.
So many statements are being put out about that. Anyway, it gave me many things to think about and many things not to forget. And it's always good
That's
for
great.
Your perspective when everyone is, when much of the media and much of social media is bullying you into thinking that this is somehow unjust for Israel to defend itself, to realize it's about as just as it gets. And
did you feel generally safe walking around the city?
Yes, I did. I wasn't too concerned. I will say our Jerusalem trip was shortened almost to the point of canceled because it was on the first Sabbath of Ramadan. And there was a big call out to do some damage
sure.
during that day. And so we didn't get to see the biblical sites in the city of David in the way that
yeah.
you normally would on
right.
one of those trips. Because, you know, somebody felt like putting out threats to blow things up.
Yeah.
So in celebration of the peaceful holiday, that was the plan. So we avoided
okay.
that area at that time. Anyway, while I was there, Schumer had plenty to say.
Oh, yes.
Can we play
yes,
a little
did.
Bit of him?
Oh,
I know we're a little late to this, but it's so
No.
It's so relevant to the Israel story
yeah.
and how Democrats in America play a part in that and want to play a much larger part, it would seem.
Yeah.
Here's Schumer on the Senate floor.
I rise to speak today about what I believe can and should be the path forward to secure mutual peace and lasting prosperity for Israelis and Palestinians. The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Let me pause that right there and just tell you guys, just so you know on what level he's putting Netanyahu, here are the other three obstacles to peace in this speech. Hamas and the Palestinians who support and tolerate their evil ways, radical right-wing Israelis in government and society, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and duly elected Israeli Prime Minister in a coalition government, Benjamin Netanyahu. Okay, so let me.
You know, I feel like Mahmoud Abbas, who is ancient now,
mm-hmm.
is saying, "Why did you throw me under the bus like that? I can't believe you would compare me with Netanyahu." I'm sure he's very upset.
Right.
I have known Prime Minister Netanyahu for a very long time. While we have vehemently disagreed on many occasions, I will always respect his extraordinary bravery for Israel on the battlefield as a younger man. I believe in his heart he has his highest priority is the security of Israel. However, I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. He has put himself in coalition with far-right extremists like Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, and as a result, he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past.
I did not get the impression that they were being stifled. The Israelis are, I don't know if you guys know that, but their reputation is to be quite outspoken. And so,
yeah.
So they are not stifled. They are openly expressing their issues with Netanyahu.
Right.
They talk about politics all the time. They have a parliamentary system, which means they have elections like our friends in the UK every 3 weeks
right.
or something. So
they want to call a snap one.
They are perfectly capable of handling this on their own.
Yeah.
Netanyahu, in addition, it's not like he's like, oh, I've secured this coalition and I will do exactly what I want and run roughshod over the Israeli people. They support at numbers of 80 and 90%
right.
what is happening right now,
yeah.
even to like with quibbles, but how the war is being prosecuted,
yeah.
because everyone basically agrees it must be and that you needed some continuity of government to do so. He put himself in a wartime
right.
coalition that would be more broad.
Yeah, it's a unity.
So
again, it's a unity coalition.
Be more unified. So the idea that he's sort of like taking advantage of this situation
right.
in any way is not accurate. Who is acting inappropriately is Chuck Schumer.
Yeah.
This is wild. We were on the ground in Israel when we heard this happen, and I was like, are you serious? That seems not possible.
Did a lot of the Israelis that you were with, did they hear about this as well, and did they have reactions?
There was a lot of, ugh.
that really sums it up, isn't it? Sort of the,
And indignance.
Okay.
Like,
who is this guy?
Well,
he is the highest ranking Jewish elected leader in the United States. The question is, who put him up to it? I don't think he went on his own saying, I must do this now.
No.
Something tells me he's trying to save somebody else.
Well, we were discussing theories for this because this is just.
Yeah, we don't know. These are just.
On its face, totally inappropriate.
Right.
To call for the ouster of an elected prime minister
timing.
In one of our closest allies
is questionable.
During a war fought for their very existence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first part of the sentence alone is enough to make it inappropriate. But to do this from the well of the Senate, to call explicitly for elections in a country that we do not have control over their elections, nor should we, just crazy stuff. So here was my thought. Is this a trial balloon sort of thing to see how badly it goes when someone in the Senate argues for this? He is the highest ranking Jewish elected official, and so it gives him a bit of cover to maybe go a little harder.
And
on
he
Netanyahu.
Does it's the classic. He doesn't say the phrase, but it's basically in there. It's implicit, which is to be sure, Netanyahu is, you know, he was a patriotic and he did everything that he thought he could do.
Mm-hmm. So is it a bit of a trial balloon? Is it meant to shore up the political progressive left in such a way that later in the speech he can say some things that are sane and correct, which he did later in the speech?
Sure.
But he kind of has to buy credit for that because
it was a sop.
Yeah, because he has to give his left flank something over here about Netanyahu and about Israel being bad and misguided in order to make an argument that it should be able to defend itself. My thought was kind of, I mean, Schumer's getting on up there like the rest of them. And the staffs are getting younger and more progressive.
Yeah.
And if your staff is shouting at you all the time about how this is just...
You need to do something.
These people are awful. They're the oppressor. Even if you're a Schumer who has been a longtime supporter of Israel, these guys write your speeches and they're in your ear all day long every day. I think eventually you're going to get some of this super lefty stuff in there. I was surprised that he went out there and did this and then like ran away from it 4 hours later.
Oh, he did. He tried to cover it up later and said, no, you know, I mean, the Israeli people, obviously, their timetable, it's up to them. Because
that's not what you said.
No. And the election, there would be an election, I think, in 2026.
I think it has to be by fall of 2026 or something like
so,
that.
So, I mean, there's time. And if they need to have it earlier for whatever reason, that's really up to them.
The weird thing, too, is, and as many expressed this in Israel, is like, look, Netanyahu has many critics in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
People are very unhappy with how this went
down.
They were unhappy with him. There was a lot of division pre-October 7th because of the judicial reform stuff. And then post-October 7th, there's been a lot of anger that this happened on his watch.
Right.
So I think there are plenty who are open to Netanyahu not sitting atop this government anymore when that time comes, when they decide to do that. But to have us tell them ends up shoring up Netanyahu. That's actually what that does.
Oh, sure. It actually it rallied like Naftali Bennett and Benny Gantz to his side to say, we're in this together.
Mm-hmm. So a little counterproductive if you're actually looking to yeah. undercut Netanyahu, but just like so
there was so awful
to an ally to do this.
There was a line in his speech also to the effect of the U.S. will have no choice but to intervene to change the present course. What does that mean?
Is that regime change?
Yeah, I mean, what are we talking about here? If they don't do it, and I think again, these are intimations of holding back aid mm-hmm. and trying to convince allies to hold back aid to Israel. And Israel, you know, they need all the ammunition they can get. They're making some of it themselves, but they depend largely on Western allies, or who you would think are allies, to help them. Now that Hamas is down at the bottom in Rafah, right?
Right.
It's like you're that close to the end, and then you're going to tell them, hold up, wait.
Right. Well, let's
leave everybody in place.
Not just hold up, wait, but hold up. We're going to hold you to such an exacting standard that you can't possibly get in there and remove these battalions of Hamas fighters who are there, right? Because they will not, the international community will just not accept the way that war must be fought to do this. And then on top of that, the international community and America, led by Democrats, is going to tell you, form a two-state solution with these guys. I mean, that is, by the way, that's another thing that being in Israel just made very clear, that like anyone in any part of the political spectrum is like the most peace-nicky person you will find is like, I mean, maybe like in 100 years we could get back to that. Like that is what people were saying. Several generations of Israelis before you will get to people who might consider a side-by-side state.
Right. After what they did.
Solution, because what they're all realizing is that 5-6 times, each time that Palestinians have turned down a state, even the most left-leaning folks are seeing that, like, oh, they're just turning it down because that's not what they want.
No,
they don't want two states, they want one state.
Right, they don't want a piece of Israel.
Yeah. There might be individual Palestinians who would be okay with that, but they are few and far between.
No. I mean, if in 100 years, you know, Mahmoud Abbas would still be there, by the way, and so he's ready to step in.
That was the 100 years figure came from one of the more optimistic folks we talked to.
Wow.
But I mean, you can understand that. The idea that the West says, okay, this terrorist regime came across your border, murdered thousands of people, engaged with almost entirely civilians, took hundreds of them back to Gaza to torture, to rape, to starve, to hurt them over a long period of time, refuses to give them back or even to give you a list of those that are alive. And you know what we should give them for that? Their own state. I think like how could you reward that salvo?
Well, again,
you can't reward that salvo
again,
in this
it's
back
in the
forth.
Hamas charter, you know, and so if they were just using this time, as you know, biding their time to build up enough forces and equipment and arms in order to launch this attack. And my question to Senator Schumer and others, of course, is if they want this, they want the ceasefire, they want Bibi Netanyahu to step down. What is their plan to defeat Hamas? Because isn't that the plan? Wasn't that the whole point, is defeating Hamas?
And if you don't get that done, you can't move on to any other part.
Snipers, really, really, really good snipers with, you know, laser precision guided bombs that just won't hit anybody or do any damage, just hit that one person. What is their plan to defeat Hamas, and what is their plan to bring the hostages back?
Yeah.
What is it? Other than war.
No, I mean, and this is the thing, too, is if you pull people on, would you like a ceasefire? You'll get a lot of yeses, right? Because ceasefire sounds nice. If you ask them, if you look at polling where people are asked, what about a ceasefire that does not include the hostages coming home?
Yeah.
And people understandably, like they, on a gut level, are just like, oh, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah, or keeping Hamas in power.
Unless you're an elite in the American government or American universities, in which case you think that would be totally fine. But I do worry about I think it's flat out delusional to talk about a two-state plan.
Not at this point, yeah.
Yeah. Having been on the ground there, that is the sense that I got in my limited experience on the ground there.
That's probably accurate, yeah.
But delusional. Stop being delusional and stop telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm. It is good for the election, though, because it's what they want to hear.
Well, I mean, that's part of it, too, is that this is obviously partly inspired by domestic politics and a need to shore up a part of the left's base that truly doesn't believe that Israel has the right to defend itself.
Right.
And that's, by the way, that's a, a young and growing part of the base.
Yeah. And the occupation before they did anything, before they even entered Gaza.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, which occupation are we talking about? Your own.
Yeah, no, they were all in the streets on October 8th before Israel had set one boot into Gaza. So we know whether what they're motivated
by. Which is this weird contradiction, because on the one hand, they're celebrating the prison breakout, right? Mm-hmm. And they're doing an action that they thought was necessary because of the conditions they were in. On the other hand, it's, the IDF and Israeli paratroopers killed all these people.
Right.
So did they do it or did they not do it?
No. Well, it's a game of Calvin ball at all times, right?
Calvin
the rules
ball.
Just change.
Yeah.
For instance, it was the world's biggest open air prison until Israel went in, at which point you learned about all the luxurious and absolutely vital, I shouldn't say luxurious, absolutely vital many hospitals, many schools. You learned about all these things that were in the open air prison.
Yeah.
All the amenities that were in the open. By the way, did you see this 2-bit influencer video from a Palestinian activist?
Oh, about the MREs?
The MREs and found them wanting. Okay. There is much suffering in Gaza, and I do not want to discount it at all. Because as every Israeli to a person told us, we don't want to be doing this war. We would like to be just living our lives. We would like to have our people not displaced and move back to where their homes are and rebuild. That being said, as usual, the leadership of Hamas, the activists, the people who get like cover from Qatar, this guy's wearing a Columbia jacket and like it looked like a Nike hat. He has an American MRE, which is what our actual troops eat. It came to him free of charge.
Yeah.
Although he notes that actually some people do have to pay for them. Guess who they're not paying? The U.S. government. Guess who's making people pay for their food?
Hamas.
Guys. At any rate, he goes through his MRE and he's complaining about it. Like, this is one of the worst meals I've ever had. And he's tossing out like peanut butter and he's remarking on the cashews. Okay, first of all, cashews are a high-end nut. Okay?
It's not peanuts. It's cashews.
We didn't give you Brazil nuts, man. I like Brazil nuts, but I'm the only person.
Macadamia nuts.
Yes. We gave you cashews, right? Yeah. This is like a big deal. I don't spring for cashews at the store.
They're very hard to get.
In my house, the adults get cashews, kids get peanuts.
You know where the cashew comes from, right? It's a huge.
Oh, I've never seen
it. You've got to break it open. I mean, it's very hard to do.
I need to learn about this. At any rate. And then I saw people commenting like, oh, it's just a random tiny bit of calories to keep people alive just long enough to bomb them. It's like, okay, guys, MREs are specifically very calorie dense on purpose because the troops need calories and they're generally large men in combat who need to be refueled. So no, we're not skimping on either the quality or the amount of calories in the MREs that we are dropping from heaven upon you.
Yeah.
And then this guy's just like, ugh, mid.
Pick. Can I say my father remembers as a kid the American aid packages that came when the Americans liberated his island from the Japanese.
Did he do a selfie? Did he do a selfie?
He did. He was complaining about the cans of corn. What is this cream corn? He did. He actually said, I guess that cream corn was not good. He said, I didn't like that cream corn, but they loved the parachute. So the parachute line, they could do so many things with the parachutes. Okay. And also the top currency was Hershey bars.
That's a nice one. At any rate, a guy was not happy with the selections, and I was making fun of him because he was just a very Instagram influencer move to do an unboxing of your MRE and crap all over it. Anyway, I hope that food gets to somebody who will appreciate it. At any rate, shall we move on to something else?
Let's do it.
Should we do the bloodbath?
Yeah, something equally uplifting.
The bloodbath kerfuffle. Let me just play.
Right. Everyone's talking about it right now.
There's about a minute clip of Donald Trump that I'm just going to go ahead and play so we get the context.
Right.
Mexico has taken over a period of 30 years, 34% of the automobile manufacturing business in our country. Think of it, went to Mexico. China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and they think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal. Those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line. And you're not going to be able to sell those guys. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
Mary Catherine, having listened to that, what was he talking about?
Well, what I would tell you, Vic, is that the entire preamble of 55 seconds leading up to that comment is exclusively about the economics of the automobile industry.
Yeah.
Bad economics, by the way, 100% tariff, not into that.
No, it's uber protectionist.
But when he says there will be a bloodbath, he's obviously talking about it in a metaphorical economic sense in this narrow concern of the automobile industry.
But you know what he meant. That's going to be my return. Well, you know what he meant.
Let me read you a few headlines. Politico, Trump says country faces bloodbath if Biden wins in November. Rolling Stone, Trump says there will be a bloodbath and elections will end if he is reelected. Daily Beast, Trump declares it will be a bloodbath for auto industry if he's not elected. Okay, that one is like slightly,
Like
we got that. The Shade Room, by the way, on Instagram was more honest than most of the mainstream media. Can we stop lying about this? Yeah. And I know the answer is no. Let's hear what Joe Scarborough has to say about people like us, Vic, who would make distinctions here.
He's talking about a bloodbath for America. It's laid out in the terms of it. And these idiots on Twitter, these idiots on cable news, these idiots on Sunday shows going, well, yeah, our presidents, you know, he was talking only about the auto industry. And this is one more. It's just bullshit. Let me say that at 6:15 a.m. It's just bullshit. He knew what he was doing. We're not stupid. Americans aren't stupid. He was talking about a bloodbath. Sometimes a bloodbath means a bloodbath. And when he finishes by saying, and that's just going to be the least of it, seriously, these people may be stupid. We're not.
I mean, look, I don't think it's the smartest thing in the world to listen to a minute clip and then like excise 50 seconds of it in order to come up with this point.
Joe Scarborough does have a point. Sometimes a bloodbath is just that. It's just a bloodbath, which is what Donald Trump is talking about, which is bathing in the blood of virgins, like that Dracula lady from Eastern Europe, the one who, I forget her name. She's like a witch.
There was a
focus on this on Hostel Part 2. Don't ever watch it. It's terrible. But the point is, this is what he's imagining Donald Trump is going to do, is bathe himself in this. It's a bloodbath.
No, it's literal. Yeah. It's obviously literal. We should, in fact, outlaw the metaphorical use of bloodbath now on.
Well, they would never use that themselves.
Oh, certainly they wouldn't, correct? Let's see. Here's a supercut, courtesy of our friend Tom Elliott at Grabian, of a lot of these folks, wouldn't you know it, using a certain verboten term.
But as Politico.com reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC.
Headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
Be a bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf. That's really tough.
Trump has left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies.
As part of the, quote, MAGA drive to take over Maricopa County. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath.
Columnist Charles Blow has a new piece for the New York Times entitled A Biden Bloodbath.
2018 midterms, you can bet that they 100% are fearing a slaughter. In fact, the word bloodbath. Bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
The Republican Party will be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath one way or the other.
Bloodbath for Bernie Sanders.
It's been a bloodbath there, shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath in next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
They meant it literally.
I can't believe that they advocated for so much political violence.
You would think, although you wouldn't think, but you would think after the whole Sarah Palin brouhaha. Do you remember when the man who shot Gabby Giffords?
Right.
And there was talk about him being influenced by Sarah Palin targeting, with the crosshairs, targeting other candidates, opposition candidates, Democrats. And they said, this is it. He's clearly inspired because he's a Fox News watcher by Sarah Palin and targeting these people. And that's why he targeted Gabby Giffords. And then it became clear he did not watch Fox News. He was not influenced by Sarah Palin.
And by the way, they didn't even make an attempt to connect it.
No.
They just said it is.
It is.
It just
they just said it is.
Just as they're doing here.
Yeah.
And by the way, look, Trump says a lot of stuff that you can nail him for without lying.
No, there's a lot of stuff he says that, you know, beginning with, you know, the Access Hollywood incident with Billy Bush and then moving on to John McCain.
There's
and talking
so many
about
things.
I like the veterans, you know, the soldiers who weren't captured. I mean, and yet you're going to focus on this and think this is it. We got him now. And part of me thinks, Mary Catherine, that, you know, yes, he rambles on. He is his own worst enemy because when he talks, he just goes on and on and he gets himself into this mess. On the other hand, they're going to get him on something. You know, they're just listening to every single word he says.
Well, and it's one thing if you're a Biden operative, right? I would still say you have some duty to not blatantly lie, but it's politics. We all understand. If you're in the press, I would say it's CNN sometimes. Just because you can imagine that Trump would do a thing, because you can imagine all sorts of things Trump would do.
Yeah.
Because Trump has done all sorts of things, and he is unconventional to say the least, right? Just because you can imagine that Trump would do a thing, it does not absolve you from the duty to figure out whether he actually did the thing. Mm-hmm. That is...
And a lot of it is just wish fulfillment.
Yes. You know. And they want these things to be true.
Yeah.
I think this signals to me how deep they're going to go, not into trying to argue on policy,
but
just head first into January 6th.
Sure.
And that every sentence he says... will be built into that scaffolding, which I don't look. It could be effective. 2022 was not a red wave, partly because people were reacting to January 6th.
Worked.
They were reacting to the same type of candidates being nominated in various places. So like it could work, but it's not speaking to people's concerns, which are policy related.
Speaking of CNN, just the other day, I saw on the Inside Politics show with Dana Bash, she had James Carville and Paul Begala on. And the Chiron said, how Biden can win the election. And it was about them giving free advice on how. I'm looking forward to the how Trump can win the election segment.
It's just a war room right there live on TV.
You know, okay, well, let's whiteboard this thing. Stop kidding ourselves. I'll tell you what. And he does talk again. And because now we become so obsessed over the terminology here. We aren't discussing, as you mentioned, what's going on with electric vehicles and with China and the idea of 100% tariff. Okay, you know, out of control. But also, you know, Biden's push, the flip side really quickly of wanting to get the United States off fossil fuels and be completely electric vehicle dependent by like 2040 or 2050 is insane. And I recommend anyone who hasn't read Bjorn Lomborg had a column in The Wall Street Journal. And he doesn't say bloodbath, but he says that if we were to be completely suddenly without the fossil fuels now, it would like billions of people around the world would die.
Yes.
You know, so.
No, it has certain advantages, like all of life on the.
Yeah. Getting things from here.
All of modernity. No, and the truth is that those policies are not popular and they put a bunch of hardships on people, which is why they're not talking about them.
Right.
Bidenomics is not working. Have we mentioned on the show, by the way, that Americans for Prosperity snapped up Bidenomics.com?
Oh, they did.
Uh-huh. So there's a whole site dedicated to the ways that Bidenomics does not work for people.
Yikes.
Parked at Bidenomics.com because somehow the heirs to the tech whizzes at the Obama administration
did not
buy the URL for that. That is just... some JV shit right there.
Yeah. Just like I own VicMattis.com and I believe Victor and Victorina Mattis.com.
You should.
You never know.
As you should. Let's see what else we got going on. Vic.
Which way did you want to go here? There's two other big stories.
Shall we do Now It Can Be Told?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Now It Can Be Told. That could be our sound effect if you guys want.
We don't even
need
any music to it. You just have your singing voice.
That's right.
Yeah.
I haven't learned to play guitar yet.
So close. You're making such a good... You were going to be like Santana by at this point. Do you remember this?
If I had only practiced every day, I would have been. What the data says about pandemic school closures 4 years later. Subhead in the New York Times. The more time students spent in remote instruction, the further they fell behind. And experts say extended closures did little... to stop the spread of COVID. Congratulations, Vic. You and I were experts 4 years ago.
I do appreciate that they had, you know, they actually used the phrase experts say.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where the experts were all this time.
What?
4 years
later. They didn't call me.
No.
They should have called me.
No, it's...
Now, to be fair, I didn't come to this realization until like maybe mid-April.
Of 2020.
Of 2020. Yes, yes. It was not exactly mm-hmm. 4 years ago. At March 19th, I didn't know what was going on either.
Sure.
I had not delved into the data about schools and what that looked like and kids. And by like June at the latest,
yeah,
we had data on this. June 2020. And the experts who were sanctioned were all so militantly of one mind that they censored, punished,
yeah,
talked junk about, pressured, ostracized,
yeah,
anyone,
right,
who said this, that they're now all having to admit 4 years later, was bad and caused a bunch of problems, right, and hurt a bunch of people. Oops. Oops.
If you look at the numbers, it really is striking on two levels. Mm. One is the gap in learning,
right,
between those who had the means to send their kids to private schools, charter schools, Catholic schools, and also the split between white students and black students.
Right.
In each case, the left, the COVID, you know, shutdown defenders who always claim to be speaking for and wanting to be the protectors of and the guardians of the poor and the minorities,
right,
were hurting them the most.
No, and further they would turn it on parents who requested kids be back in school, because many of them would make the argument.
Yeah.
One might argue, recognizing their privilege, mm-hmm, they would say, look, I can get tutors for my kids. I can get my kid in a pod. But like, there are plenty of kids with disabilities who have lower incomes, who rely on, yep, the structure of school, who are suffering really bad. And they would tell you that that was racist,
right,
to use other students as the vehicle for your selfish need.
Right, it was
need,
a win-win for them.
Your selfish, yeah, need to get your babysitter back so you could do, yeah, your yoga classes. I don't do yoga, so take that.
Yeah, you were attacked.
No, I mean, verbally,
not physically.
I took fewer slings and arrows than many.
Mm.
I have many mom friends who did the really, yeah, hard work of, I reported on some of it, but I wasn't the one going to the meeting every week and getting yelled at,
right,
and getting dragged out of meetings or sitting through Zoom meetings where they wouldn't let you meet with your public officials, mm, all the time, constantly. I did less of that than some of them. And I want to read an email. Somebody tweets that she emailed her school board members 4 years ago to tell them exactly what this article states. This was one response. Students wouldn't return to full-time in-person classes for 18 months. Here's what she got back from her school board. Each of your emails is more absurd than the last. James Craig, Jefferson County Board of Education.
Does he elaborate?
Nope. Nope, this was the tactic, right? The tactic was, yeah, to say, you're not an epidemiologist, you're not an expert, yeah, you don't teach school, you're not a principal or a school, mm-hmm, board member, you can't evaluate risk. But it turns out we can,
yeah,
and we're better at it than you are. So what's going to happen now?
It is appropriate now that we are 4 years to the almost the day, right, mm-hmm, or past the day now when the shutdown happened. Right, it was in March of 2020.
Right.
So you're beginning to see people at least make some effort to remind everyone else how insane things were. I saw somebody had tweeted out a video on X reminding them, for example, a funeral,
right,
where, you know, a family can't even comfort a mother because they brought the chairs close and they said, please keep the chairs apart.
They jack them up and drag them apart.
No,
yes.
And of course, a lot of people were not even able to have funerals or to see their loved ones when they
died.
They died
people
alone.
People died alone.
For what?
Yes.
There's Scott Atlas and a co-author in the Wall Street Journal have a column just talking about the damage that was caused by learning loss and you know how one outweighed the other. And they estimate something like, you know, the lockdowns are estimated to have saved at most maybe about 16,000 lives, which is great for them. 37,000 people, I think, a year die of the flu.
Right.
But there's no shutdown for that. And they believe that from April of 2020 till and for the next several years, the deaths that resulted from the lockdown, right, over about 400,000.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. That's another study came out, this one about the alcohol and drug
Yeah.
Abuse and overdoses.
Sure.
Another thing that people with discernment and ability to do risk calculation
right.
saw coming, right. and everyone told you, no, that's not real, just like learning loss isn't real. It turns out it was all real.
Right. Those numbers, by the way, in the data are conservative estimates about, oh, some kids are as far back as maybe 6 months behind in learning. It's right. more than that, I think.
Let me also add this. This is a Harvard Med guy, professor at Harvard Med. He posts the New York Times story and says, I have no expertise in the educational impacts of school closures, but don't doubt them. However, I'm somewhat skeptical of the argument that school closures, however painful they may have been, had no effect on temporarily slowing COVID spread. Some of my friends jump into this thread to inform him. We actually have a lot of data on this.
Yeah.
This is Karen. I don't know how you say her last name, but she's a great follow. At Karen, V-A-I-T-E-S. I got to learn how to say that. She says, we have data to answer this question. Multiple international studies, a massive U.S. database that tracked COVID instances in schools with different modalities for 1+ years. We don't have to speculate. Experts say schools didn't have to close because we have abundant evidence. Now, this speaks to something that's happened the entire 4 years, which is people dedicated to closing the schools
right.
who are very stubborn about it, who
yeah.
will not admit that other people got it right, mm-hmm. continue not to know what the data show.
No, and they'll pretend that there is no data.
No,
or
they're just
they're
like
going to be like
proudly yeah. ignorant of it. They're like, well, yeah. you know, I haven't actually looked into this, but I assume that like we probably saved a lot of grandmas. No, you didn't. You didn't save a lot of grandmas.
Right.
A, because the transmission, if you keep kids in one classroom mm-hmm. in a particular place all day, instead of displacing them from that place and putting them with grandmas who have to take care of them, with aunts and uncles while their parents are at work, at home with their parents who might be essential workers and coming back and bringing the virus in. Like, they were in all these other places instead of just yeah. in school, where they would have been more
right.
socially, it's not socially distanced, but they would have had fewer contacts.
Yeah.
But we didn't do that.
I keep on hoping for a reckoning. I'm not sure. I mean, you have to remember, again, things like skate parks being filled with sand, people being fined for going to the beach to look at a sunset in California, you know,
or
putting planks down in basketball courts, you know, that can't be outside.
We went out to Colorado and the, what is it? Is it the Manitou? What is it called? The Manitou Incline.
Okay.
Is that what's called? Yeah. In Colorado Springs. It was closed.
Oh, yeah. Because
a hiking trail.
Yeah.
A stairway up a mountain in Colorado Springs
dangerous.
Was closed,
sure. yeah.
and we snuck onto it halfway up and did half the trail. We didn't do the whole one because someone told us you could be charged thousands of dollars.
For what?
If they caught you being outside on a yeah. Manitou Incline? I don't know.
Well, again, but people,
it was
people
wild.
Lost their minds. I bring this up quite often on the show, which is the going to the Safeway. And the guy yelling at me from like, you know, 20 feet away that I'm walking backwards because I wanted to reach for a different can of something. And he's like, nope, you got to go all the way around. I'm like, I'm right there. No, you cannot go backwards.
What's crazy to me?
Based on what?
What's crazy to me is that the Adam Gaffney's, this Harvard Med guy who does not know
yeah.
the information. And then he attempts to backfill this because mm-hmm. he starts getting a lot of responses from people. And he starts throwing up these crappy studies that are like, well, look, this one says that something... And all the people who actually know the data jump in,
yeah.
like my friend Kelly in Georgia, who's super smart about uh-huh. this stuff and keeps correcting the CDC every 3 weeks on their idiocy. She's jumping in like, these studies are crap. You know why they're crap.
Yeah.
Here's the actual real world experience where we know
mm-hmm.
that schools did not drive community spread.
Right.
They just didn't.
Right. The answer, by the way, is Sweden. I don't know if you know that.
Well, that's the other thing. They pretend.
Yeah,
They pretend like we yeah. don't know what happened other places or that no one anything different. All of Europe did something different.
Yeah. They opened early.
All of the Catholic schools did something yeah. different. All yeah. the public schools in red states did something different. And lo and behold, those places ended up better off.
Yeah. Now, I remember going around in 2020.
I'll be fine, guys.
I know. No, I remember going around in 2020. It must have been the fall of 2020. And the Catholic schools came back.
Yeah.
And I was going on a walk or a run or something, and I walked by one of them, and they had kids in a playground. And I'll grant it, at that point, they still wanted kids to wear masks, which is sad.
It was
but they were outside right. and they were playing together, and everybody else was told, stay indoors, and the Washington Post is saying, poetry slam. You could do poetry slam. Don't leave. Don't even open the door.
The problem is that these people who are still ignorant of this and still stubborn about it, they will remain in charge.
Yeah,
these will,
that's what
these
I'm saying about no reckoning. I don't
who
know
who make these decisions. And one of the real downsides to nominating Trump is that no one is incentivized to have a reckoning about this because he thinks he did a fantastic job. He's said it many times.
Right, he was there.
Now, I would argue, sure, there are parts of it that I think probably went less badly on the civil liberties front than they would have with a Democrat in office. But he didn't do no shiny, happy job.
No.
He handed over the keys to the American economy to Anthony Fauci. So, not great. Not great. Okay.
Well that's
sorry, kids with the learning loss.
At least we have to look forward to, you know, our President DeSantis. Oh, wait.
Yeah. He opened schools.
Yeah.
He opened schools. We need to do some brief SCOTUS talk.
Even though you want to do over. That? Okay, sure.
Yeah. Can we do 5 minutes of SCOTUS? Okay.
Sure.
Even though I listened to 2 hours of it and I have much more to say about it than that.
I was going to say if you wanted to talk about it on a Thursday.
We could. No, but we should.
Okay, a little bit.
What do you think? Should we do Kate update or this? Let's do this. I listened to the arguments. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The Murthy versus Missouri case, which is the state of Missouri, the state of Louisiana's representation, plus some other individuals who were targeted by the federal government's attempts to censor, versus the Surgeon General and others in the U.S. government. This is the free speech case. Up against the American government for colluding with social media to shut down speech, particularly during 2021 in the vaccine era of the pandemic, but on a lot of fronts, shutting down viewpoints that they thought were inappropriate or inaccurate. Turns out the government was actually distributing a lot of the misinformation, but they needed to put all of us in our places. So Glenn Greenwald noted this headline from earlier in the year that's like, or from 2023, that is, the story's been undercovered. FBI and White House likely coerced social media platforms into removing posts, appeals court rules. So this has been ruled on several times. There was an injunction in place to keep the federal government from jawboning, which is the term for basically cracking down on stuff that is protected speech via an intermediary, which is Facebook, which is Twitter, which is whomever. There was an injunction. The government said, hey, this is too much. This injunction is too wide reaching.
Right.
I believe that was removed for a bit. And now they talked about the merits at the Supreme Court this week. I got to say, okay, we're going to get to Ketanji Brown Jackson's quote on this. But before we get to that, the court didn't sound like it's going to do a big brushback to the federal government on this.
No.
During these oral arguments, which surprised me a little.
Yeah, I think their concern is that there should be at least some level of communication with these intermediaries, as you mentioned. So it can't be that they cannot say anything at all.
Right.
I mean, the operative word that you mentioned in that Glenn Greenwald piece was coercion or coerce. And that's the turning point right there.
That's what you can't do.
You cannot coerce, right? And also, is any of that coercion, you know, does it lead to active suppression? And also, was any of this coordinated, right? That's also that's of great concern. The DOJ's pushback is, of course, no coercion. This is strictly, in their words, quote, to inform and persuade.
Yeah.
To inform and persuade, but
Nice little social media company you got there.
No, that's exactly right. It reminded me, there's a great scene. If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and just type in like Sopranos coffee shop. And it's a scene where Patsy Parisi goes in with another buddy. And then they talk to the store manager, Dale, and says, you know, God forbid, you know, they're offering their protection services. This is still, he says, it's still a transitioning neighborhood. And he says, you know, God forbid someone gets hurt, even a manager, you know, and that's what it is. And I want to mention
that's what it feels like.
Rob Flaherty, who is the White House digital strategist, right? Mm-hmm. He's quoted here as having told Facebook, and I quote, I care mostly about what actions and changes you are making to ensure you're not making our country's vaccine hesitancy problem worse. It's a little heavy handed.
Yeah.
But as you note, though, it doesn't strike me that the Supreme Court, based on even Roberts's questioning today.
No, what they seem to be concerned about, as you noted, is that they're having trouble drawing a line between coercion, which is not allowed, and encouragement or informing,
yeah,
which should be allowed, sure, right? And I think we can all agree that no communication should not be the standard.
Right.
Of course, an agency who wants to tell a social media company, hey, this might be of interest to you, but it just got so out of hand,
yeah,
right? So the court is saying, if we side with Missouri, even though like some of this clearly is not great behavior, the court's concern sounded like if we side with Missouri, it could mean that it just wipes out a bunch of legitimate communication,
right,
between the government and social media. Now, I'm just going to like suggest that there might have been some missing of the way social media works, as none,
yeah,
of these guys are on social media, nor should they be. I do not want Scottish judges on Twitter. I'm just saying, I think the effects of this kind of campaign against,
yeah,
speech of Americans was maybe underplayed a little bit by the justices, because there are 20,000 pages of conversation between the federal government and these social media entities as part,
yeah,
of this case. Mind you, we would know about none of it, including Flaherty's comment, had there not been this lawsuit.
Right.
Right? This stuff is happening behind the scenes all the time.
During
COVID, Vic, did you know exactly what you weren't supposed to talk about?
What weren't we supposed to?
It was very clear,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you were on social media.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't question where it,
yes,
came from. Well, you cannot question where COVID came from.
You can't talk about being injured by a vaccine,
oh,
for,
no,
instance.
No.
That would be,
no,
considered.
No, no, no.
Even if it's true.
You'd get flagged.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we all knew what was verboten.
Yeah.
We knew it for a reason, because these guys were working behind the scenes to make sure,
yeah,
that the social media companies sent that message,
mm-hmm,
to us very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's
in addition
question
to the Hunter laptop. I'm just going to throw that in there.
Well, and here's the problem is that so much American speech was chilled by the fact that everyone knew exactly,
yeah,
what you would go down for.
Right.
If you tweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as a result, a lot of conversations didn't get had,
mm-hmm,
that should have been had more openly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think if they escape from this,
yeah,
with no brushback at all from,
right,
the court, I think it spells problems for us in the future.
Yeah.
Now, I am not the one, like our friends on the left, to say the court is trash because it disagrees with me. I don't think that. I think they're thinking through this in a...
Even Ketanji Brown Jackson, you had some concerns?
Well, I did want to play a little,
yeah,
bit,
okay,
from her, yes.
Okay.
Here's a bit of Ketanji Brown Jackson's quote, and I'll play it,
okay,
for you guys, and I'll let you be aghast.
Right,
and
we
then
have
I will,
audio, right?
And
we
then
have
I will attempt to,
yeah,
discuss whether it is mitigated at all. Here we go.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, you know, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. And you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
Okay. So her quote at the beginning there was, my,
yep,
biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways,
mm-hmm,
in the most important times, she says.
As,
she means,
as the First Amendment often does.
Now, that is the entire point of the First Amendment. First Amendment is meant to hamstring the government. It is meant to be inconvenient to the government.
Yeah.
Now, if I am to read this charitably, what she is arguing is that in places where there truly is an emergency,
right,
where the government, or perhaps criminal activity,
mm-hmm,
or threatening activity, where the government does need to communicate with these, and it would not infringe on free speech, that might be the charitable read of that, is that that's the part she's talking,
sure,
about, and that his theory is too far-reaching and would preclude that kind of argument. Now, here's my complaint about that.
I was going to say that was being charitable. Now, here's
my complaint about that.
Yeah.
Even if I'm charitable about,
mm-hmm,
that, everything was an emergency,
yeah,
during COVID, and it justified everything. and everything will be an emergency in the future
right.
in order to justify more of this.
Right.
So I don't agree with a vaccine campaign exception to the
right.
First Amendment. I don't agree with a COVID emergency exception to the First Amendment. I don't agree with her hypothetical, which, by the way, was
the other exceptions.
Yeah. Her hypothetical, by the way, was a wild thing about people posting on social media that you should jump out of a third story window and teens
that.
Would be like reposting it. And in that case, could the government act by contacting these
right.
social media companies? But the whole theory is like the government can say something's an emergency and then take away your free speech rights by going through these companies.
Yeah.
I don't agree. But you know what? Look,
yeah.
my charitable read
yeah.
would be good news for the country because I don't want Ketanji Brown Jackson to believe,
right.
to see the First Amendment this way.
She had other questions too, and you I think you cut it off too early. The other question was if the lawyer can explain or define what a woman is. I forget. Okay.
That's definitely not within your
not
free speech rights,
no.
by the way.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so we'll find more out
more
about
more
that in the future.
They're just deliberating now, but the decision won't be until
They
late.
Sounded skeptical of
okay.
the
okay.
Missouri-Louisiana side of the case.
They did. I made a joke at the beginning of the show about eating and drinking on air. No, I'm kidding. I get it. It does sound terrible, depending on how much of a mouthful of a chitza I have. But trust me, that won't be happening anytime soon. I have some call-outs for you, though.
Okay, go.
Okay. The first one is our good friend Hugh Hewitt, who was on Fox's Special
oh, yes.
Report. And in the Winners and Losers segment, mentioned our podcast as one of the winners, along with commentary.
So kind.
And our friend Dan Senor is calling me back. Loser, of course, was Chuck Schumer. So
ah.
that was good. And thank you, of course, the fetching Mrs. H, because she is a true hammerhead. Listener.
She is indeed.
Okay, and now I got a second one for you. This is funny. On Saturday, went to we just stopped by a St. Patrick's Day party. Friends of my daughter, the parents were having one. So I come over there. I bring a Guinness. And, you know, I'm not much of a beer drinker myself, but mm-hmm. it is a special occasion. So I made an exception and hope that I wouldn't get a gal. Kate is talking to another couple. I walk in and join the conversation. And the husband says, oh, are you a big Guinness drinker? And I said, actually, no, I don't really drink beer. I made an exception, but I don't drink beer because I get gout. And the woman looks at me and she says, excuse me, is your name Vic Mattis? And I said, why, yes, it is.
Why, yes.
And she said, I listen to your podcast.
Your
Getting
reputation
precedes you. And it was, she goes, I just heard you talk about gout. And I said, boy, that voice is so familiar. Who else fills the airwaves with their personal medical ailments?
Yes, your maladies are
anyway,
your calling card.
So a shout out to listener Susie, who's with her husband, Chris, and their lovely daughter. So. That wraps up this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. And you can follow me on Twitter at Victorino Mattis.
I'm at MK Hammer on Twitter, at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. Follow the show at Getting Hammered Podcast on Instagram or YouTube. This has been a supersized episode. So enjoy, everybody. And we will be back later this week. This has been a Nebulous Media Podcast. Thank you for getting hammered responsibly.